Welcome to Minority Corner
with an AK
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
what is happening this week, James? I'm so excited.
We have a big guest on Minority Corner this week. We've got Brian Benson, the creative force behind this new documentary about Dolores Huerta. It's going to win all the awards this award season. It's huge. It's legendary. Yes. We're going to talk about Dolores Huerta and this awesome documentary.
I am so excited to hear this interview that you did with Brian. You've been pumping this interview from months ago, so it has been hotly anticipated.
Yeah, and we're also going to touch on, we're going to talk about Captain Marvel, how Brie Larson is already a superhero. We're going to talk about who's the new bi celebrities who are coming out of the woodwork these days.
Exactly, and how do you say it? Is it Holly Berry or Halle Berry?
Yeah, we're going to find out. We're gonna touch on all of that. So stay tuned. We've got an action-packed episode. Grab your butts and grab your neighbor's butts.
And it's all for you guys, because we love you.
Si se puede.
Do we have an episode for you guys?
Do we have an episode for you?
We have been pumping this episode for so long because, like, James, I never really got the scope of how big this is.
Yes. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, we have a Brian Benson. He has a new documentary coming out about Dolores Huerta, appropriately titled Dolores.
Convenient.
Isn't that convenient, right? You know?
Yeah.
Say her name. Say her name. And Brian is just so, we'll get into it a little bit later, but just to give you a little teaser, Brian is like the creative force behind movies like La Mission with Benjamin Bratt and Diary of a Teenage Girl with Kirsten Wiig and Alexander Skarsgård. First of all, I am holding it down with these name pronunciations. I just get a little bit of snaps? I was impressed.
I am giving you all the props because you are traveling the globe of famous last names right now.
And they're not easy. No. Alexander Skarsgårdy? Well, I fucked it up then.
They even have
I was trying to spell that shit when I was doing some marketing for it. Like, it's got this like weird
thing over the A. It has a different letter that we do not use in our English language.
Involved.
There's like a weird little bubble floating above a G somewhere.
I don't even know what a diphthong is, but I think it's in there.
He's hot though. That's all that matters. He could diphthong me.
Ooh, yeah. So we have, you heard it here. Alexander, come get your diphthong on over here.
Uh-huh.
So we have all that, but before we get to that, Aneke, we have some biznass to discuss.
Ooh, what's this? Tell me what the biznass is.
Some biz nasty. We have some, we didn't really get to touch, like Aneke and I, we backlogged or front logged or logged a lot of episodes while Aneke was here in New York. So we missed out on some news.
We did. And we were like, I mean, just to be honest, we record really well when we're together. So we wanted to give you guys some quality ass episodes. So we did a lot.
You're welcome.
And a lot of those episodes lined up well. I was a little worried that some craziness would happen and we would miss out, but I think that they lined up pretty damn well.
Yes, because y'all needed some healing after the whole entire Charlottesville thing that happened, and we had you, Super Soul Sunday, so that happened.
We got you.
I wanted to just recognize a superhero. Can I do that?
Please.
You know what I love? I love it when the superheroes who play superheroes on the big screen and they become superheroes in real life.
Okay.
Like Chris Evans, he was fighting like Nazis on the Twitters.
Yes, and also going to visit sick children in his Captain America uniform, which is, give him props, man.
Like, way to go. And I think it makes, like, and I think it's just so, I think it's amazing because it's like, you really are that hero. And like, you have a huge platform when you become this hero, you know?
Right.
Like Miss Brie Larson, who's going to be our Captain Marvel coming up, she tweeted, I don't
know,
did you see what she tweeted?
Uh-uh.
Okay, Captain Marvel, like, defender of the galaxy.
Yeah, not just the United States, the galaxy.
Not just the United Galaxy, like, she's fucking holding it down. she retweeted the syllabus for white people to educate themselves, and she wrote a tweet, and she's like, I'm looking forward to reading this, will you join me, or something like that.
Like, I love it. Okay, you know what? Not only did she do that, but do you know what she did in, this was like her own silent tribute during the Oscars. So they have the winner of the opposite gender of the Oscars give the award of the previous year, give the award to the winner of this current year. So she won.
Right. So she had to give it to that rapist fuckface.
Yes. Which we're not even going to give his name or whatever, but she did not clap.
I don't know him.
And she spoke out about it and spoke about her own experiences, which is in Hollywood, that is hard to do because everybody wants their connections. Everybody wants to be able to be in the next movies. And she took a stand when people are afraid to do that.
Absolutely. And like, I mean, I just like, and to be, and like standing on that platform as Captain Marvel and doing that, like she really is, you know, she's not just collecting a paycheck. Like I love it. Like,
she's
really
living it. She's living the role.
Yeah. So I am here. I am here for that. So class is in session. Check out that syllabus. I'll post a link to it. And I was eyeing it. There is some good shit for it on there. Ooh. Especially, I think, for anybody to take a look at, especially because, you know, not all of our POC struggles are the same. So there's even ones about being an ally for, you know, Muslim folks. My favorite article on there by Peggy McIntosh about white privilege. That's on there.
Oh, my God. I got to read this. This sounds like excellent.
There's articles, there's books that are must read, like Beloved by What's Her Bucket, Toni Morrison. Yeah, there's a lot of just really great stuff to just really arm and educate yourself. So I would say, and also like, we can't be doing all the educating. That's not our job.
That has been the motto of After Charlottesville, where it's like, white people come get your people, because I'm tired. Ooh. You know,
tired.
And it's
just,
reached a point.
I'm tired. Like, it's I got other things to do.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is all about, I really just, since we're bringing it up and I'm following in Brie Larson's footsteps, I want to say that Charlottesville, don't let it use it as a distraction. Yes, there's crazy fringe white supremacists out there. There has always been. And they just feel more emboldened now. But don't let this be like a, oh, they're racist, I'm not. You know, we have a system of racism that we all subscribe to here in the United States. So what we need to do is be like, yeah, those people are crazy. They're scary. We're keeping an eye on them. But we're also going to keep an eye on your cousin Ricky, who's saying, oh, Asians don't drive well, or, oh, I just am not attracted to black women, or, oh, you know, weird, tiny, little, innocuous racism things are dangerous. So we need to pay attention to those as well.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And it's like shutting down those things. Like, it's not enough. And there's even an article in the syllabus that talks about being a bystander, which we talked about as well.
Yes.
You just sort of letting that shit slide only perpetuates that. And also, like, what I've been appreciating seeing that was like mobs of like white people taking down those racist statues. Like, y'all can, and you know what? Y'all can do that, and y'all have to.
Exactly.
Because if Aneka and I go over to some statue and we try to take it down, our ass is probably going to get arrested and potentially shot by the police. Like, we can't do that.
It's
y'all
so
have
true.
That power and that privilege. So, and y'all put it up, so y'all take it down.
Y'all take it down, and we will be happy to stand there with you while you take it down. But
y'all
if
take that shit down.
Yeah.
Can I just want. That is like the slogan for that. Take that down. I think we should do a world tour of just going around to the different statues that need to be taken
just
down.
Just pointing at and being like, take that down.
You take that down. Take it down. It'll be great. We'll have like a festival. We'll have Jennifer Hudson play.
I would not
play.
Even mind. I would be so happy and honored to do a world tour of Confederate statues with you, James. Just scream and take that down.
Take that down. We'll do live episodes of Minority Corner when we go around to all these cities that we normally probably wouldn't go to, but now we're going there with a cause and meaning. So
I love it.
Minority Quarter, take that statue down tour coming summer 2018. So get ready, y'all.
Get ready, because we know those Confederate statues aren't just limited to the South either. So we're coming all over United States.
I see you, Oregon. I know you got something up there.
Take that down.
One other thing I want to touch on. I just saw this article recently. Apparently, 2017 has been a really good year for people coming out.
Oh,
and not
okay.
just coming outside, like coming out of the closet.
Oh, just not like leaving their house.
Being like, I went outside today. I'm feeling good.
I'm coming out.
I love that your lyrics were, I'm coming out, I don't know what to do, but I'm do.
Those aren't the lyrics.
I'm coming out, I don't know what to do. That's not the lyrics. But I'm outside and I'm happy, y'all. Those are not the lyrics.
Okay.
You better go have a meeting in the ladies' room because those are not the lyrics.
I need to go consult Diana Ross on that one.
You do. She is mad at you. But like, we all know like the biggest one recently, Aaron Carter came out. As bisexual.
Yes, I want to applaud him, but he is going through some, stuff right now.
Yes, he is, but you know what? Aaron Carter, if you're listening, or someone get this show to Aaron Carter, because Aaron Carter needs Minority Corner. Go back to one of the episodes we did about drug abuse and the LGBT community, Aaron Carter. Listen to it. That's your episode. Listen to it.
He says that he's not addicted to drugs, and it's an eating disorder, but he's looking... Okay.
But like he had that DUI recently. So
also, did you see his tweets to Hillary Duff? Or was it Hillary Duff? Yes.
Probably.
She was like, ooh, I had a no, it was Chloe. No, who was it? I don't know. Some starlet was like, okay. I had a crush on Aaron Carter when I was a kid. Oh, it was Chloe. The Grace, whatever her last name is. The one who was in...
Oh, Chloe Grace Mortiz. Another one with the funny letters over her name that I don't know what those mean. Like the eyeballs.
Yeah, she has like an umlaut. I don't know. Anyway, so she was like, I had a crush on Aaron Carter when I was a little kid. And then he was like, call me Chloe. It's mutual. And then that would be one thing. He tweeted her again, was like, still thinking about you. With like M's, like, like the It's like.
Yeah, he was probably high as a kite when he wrote that. You know what? Yeah. You know, I am saying Aaron Carter, especially because we talk about biphobia so much. So I love that there's more folks coming out as bisexual.
Me too.
And Aaron Carter, you are family. And so, and also the fact that we have this out and proud person, this out and proud bisexual person who also beat Shaquille O'Neal.
Shaquille O'Neal says he's bi?
Well, no, like he beat Shaquille O'Neal in a game of basketball, according to his song, which I'm assuming was based on true.
Let me tell you how I beat Shaq. I was a little too old for that, too,
but I was aware. I was aware that Aaron Carter, gumdrop Aaron Carter, beat Shaquille O'Neal. And so we got family that beat Shaquille O'Neal in a game of a pickup game of basketball. And I'm not mad at it.
And wrote a song about it.
And wrote a song to tell the world. So here we are. Look what we can do. Also, who also came out recently, there's a laundry list, but here's the ones that I recognize from this list that Queerity did.
Okay.
Shannon Purse. She was on Stranger Things. Who was the name of the character that everybody loved who died?
Oh, Barb.
And they were mad.
Barb.
I was like Beth, Beyonce, Beatrice.
No, just Barb. Plain old Barb. Oh, she came out as bi or lesbian? She came out as
bisexual.
Oh, good for her.
Kenyon Lonsdale, who he plays on The Flash, he is Iris West's brother, and he's black, and he came out as bisexual.
Yes!
And this actress, Taylor Bennett, and then Thomas Decker came out, which, like... Thomas Decker, if you Google, I can't tell you. I did a show with him.
You don't know who he is, James.
I do. I did a show with him. I don't know how to describe him to you.
Is he a man, a white man, a black
he's
man?
He's a white dude who he was in like, I forgot. Oh, he was in Heroes and he played like the cheerleader's like best friend. He's done like a few different things. Anyways, I had a side eye. He did a huge coming out thing. And I did a show with him, the Peaches Christ production in San Francisco.
Oh, nice.
And he came out, but I was like, but we already, who was he coming out to?
Oh, so he already came out?
Because I was like, but he did like a huge thing. Like he wrote a big letter and like posted on the internet and it became like all the news on these queer websites that like Thomas Decker came out. But I'm like, but when were you not out? Like you were dating that one guy when I saw you and then you broke up with him.
That is like, I want you to come out next year, James.
You know what? 2018 might be the year when I might do it.
You know, we'll have a party.
And okay, don't push me to do it. I'm not ready.
I am here waiting for you, ready whenever you're ready.
I don't know if my career can take it. You know, I'm really eyeing my career. And
James, we can't joke about this.
I know. You know what? I'm coming out right now.
Yeah.
Y'all, surprise. James Arthur M. he's a queer.
James coming out. He don't know what to do.
I'm gonna podcast it. Well, we gotta get onto this show, Aneke.
We gotta give the people this interview because this movie, Dolores, is going to be huge. And you are hearing this interview first from us, James. Yes. did his due diligence and gave an amazing interview. Get ready to be enthralled and educated.
I did what I could. And just take notes. There's a lot of information that's going to come out here. And some of you might feel a little embarrassed that you didn't know about a lot about Dolores Huerta, but that's why you come to Minority Corner, to learn, laugh, and play. So get ready to learn about the activist, the rebel, feminist, and mother, Dolores Huerta. And make sure to stay here at the very, very end, because we are going to let you know how our 100th episode is coming up.
Yes, we're coming back. Don't just end when the interview ends. Like, oh, we're still going to be here talking to you.
Because you got to stay till the end to figure out how you can win a big prize pack coming back for our 100th episode. I feel like a radio DJ. Stay tuned, caller number 100. But we've got
a street team. Giveaway. Where's that we're gonna be doing.
Right, like, or some sound effects. I guess they're right there. We on budget. And also, sidebar, just caveat, if you can't feature it, if you can't fix it, feature it. The audio on this interview with Brian is not the best, but we're still figuring out how to do interviews, y'all. So don't come for me.
We're getting better. We're getting better every day. You guys are investing on the ground floor.
Minority Corner. It takes a village. But anyways, the content is so beautiful and so amazing. So I hope you guys all get as inspired as I was. And here it is, Brian Benson from the documentary about Dolores Huerta. Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. This is, you already know who I am. But we've got a special guest. It's always weird when I do these intros, because I stare deeply into the person's eyes that I'm looking at, and it's awkward. So I'm not going to look at you as I do this, but we've got Brian Benson here. You might know him if you're in the San Francisco area as Cousin Wonderlet. Can I say that? Is that okay? Sure. If I mention that? It's true. You're also a producer guy, producing all kinds of stuff. You're also an educator and a teacher. Yeah. We got Brian here. So welcome, Brian, to the podcast.
Thanks.
Yeah. We're actually in New York City because Brian is a jet setter here. And while he was here, I was like, I gotta get him on the podcast here. How's New York?
Great. It's a quick trip, 3 days.
Yeah.
And screening of my short film the first day, and then...
And the short film, this is the short film about Cousin Wonderlet, right?
Right.
Yeah. Describe the story.
Well, it's kind of a... This is the ninth film in a series.
Yeah.
And that never seems to end. It's kind of one note. You know, it's a bunch of takes on the same thing.
Yeah.
So, like, by telling you what it is, it gives it away.
Okay, so spoiler. Don't want any spoilers here. I mean... You've got to come check it out.
And the film has been making its rounds. So
yeah.
I'm kind of milking it.
Right.
I think it's in its 2 years of festival runs. I think this was like number 45 or something.
Okay.
So it's like, I think I'm going to put it online soon. I think it's...
So you might get to see it.
I think it's, I don't think it's fresh anymore.
Can you describe Cousin Wonderlet to the world? She's your drag persona.
Yeah. I mean, it started, I was going to see my ex-boyfriend in Portland.
Okay.
And I had all these wigs and all these costumes left over from movies.
Yeah.
And I put on this wig and these glasses and these teeth. And somehow it was transformative.
Wow.
And there was a character there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I wore the stuff to the airport and, you know, parents were like telling their kids not to stare at the big girl. And
oh, wow.
There was a thing. So I showed a picture of the character to my friend Peaches Christ.
Yeah.
I produced her film All About Evil. And she's like, I'm putting her in my show. So, in fact, she made it part of the deal. She's like, if you produce my movie, I will put her in a show. She said, I'll make her locally famous.
Wow.
So,
and then a star was born.
She did.
I mean, Cousin Wonderlet is a local star of, like, and she always gets thrown into different, like, scenarios. Like, so I've done some of, like, the Peaches Christ shows or some things like that. Or, you know, someone's like, yeah, just throw Cousin Wonderlet in that scene. She gets in precarious situations. She's like kidnapped or taken advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, she's a very earnest, simple girl with dreams.
Yes.
She has a good self-image, and she doesn't understand why the world doesn't regard her the way she regards herself.
It's kind of beautiful.
So, yeah, I mean, there's, I mean, you know, the thing about the movies are she's a very sweet girl surrounded by shit. And sometimes literally.
Right.
So, I mean, the movies were... I started performing at Tranny Shack.
Yeah.
And I'm super insecure about performing, and so I thought I could make a movie, which I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
Confident with. Yeah. Plus, you can do a second take.
Right.
Or a third take, or whatever, until you get it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Live is live.
Yeah.
So, like, it happens, it happens. So, I felt like I could do a performance and show, like, the first two acts
right.
in a short movie, and then the performance was the third act or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So that's how these movies started, and they were, you know, intended for late night, gay, somewhat drunk audiences, and, you know, I mean, I was just trying to shock.
Yeah.
And it was like a four-year-old boy thinking of all these disgusting things and then me making a movie about them.
Yeah, it reminds me, I've seen your work, and you have, like, a sort of John Waters-esque, like, what inspires you to do, like, the sort of shock?
Well, that was it. Like, it was, you know, it was just to get reactions and to get people to pay attention.
Totally.
You know, and it was either fast cut, ridiculous things, and somehow I got a following.
Yeah.
And there's pockets. You know, I got an email from someone in Glasgow.
Yes.
Scotland, who says that every gay person in Glasgow knows my character.
That's fantastic. So you guys, like, a Cousin Wonderlit world tour. Have you already started this? Have you booked this?
Well, no, but I haven't really performed much lately. I've been super busy with other stuff, but I am trying to brand her because I'm writing a feature musical.
Yeah.
But it's taking forever.
You've been working on this for a while.
I have been, and so, I think at the pace that I'm currently going, I will be 150 by the time I finish it.
Which will be great for her. It'll be great to see her at, you know, a different level in her life.
Yeah.
I mean, she's still technically a young girl, but, you know.
She is. Yeah.
It'll be great for you to stretch yourself as, you know, a 150-year-old
man. Playing a 12-year-old girl or whatever.
Yes. I want to get to some of the stuff that you've been up to lately. So you've been working on you did this documentary.
Right.
Huge documentary about Dolores Huerta.
Right.
Right? How did you get involved in that project?
Well, it started with Carlos Santana.
Okay.
It was his idea. He wanted Dolores's, like a lot of women, like a lot of people of color, a marginalized historical figure.
Yeah.
Icon, legend. And Carlos wanted to give her due. He wanted to, you know, help put her into American history that she, you know, she's a major part of. And so Carlos went to Peter Bratt, to direct it, who he did La Mission.
Oh, yeah.
With his brother Benjamin Bratt.
Yes. I've seen that movie many a time.
Oh, you have?
It's crazy watching it, because, like, especially when you're living in San Francisco, I feel like a lot of movies that exist in San Francisco don't really exist in San Francisco, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, that life isn't really like that, or they clearly didn't shoot that, or they just get, like, the B-roll footage for it, but, like... That movie was fucking San Francisco.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, a lot of stuff is, like, shot in Toronto or whatever. And
they'll do, like, an aerial shot.
They'll shoot the bridge or whatever.
And it's
like, but I, there, you know, it was cheaper to shoot in Oakland.
Oh, really?
It was cheaper to shoot in Oakland and then the city and then San Francisco. And the director's like, no. He fought for it. He's
really?
Like, this has to be shot. This is a movie called The Mission.
Yeah.
This has to be shot in The Mission.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I mean, with film, you pick your battles.
Yeah.
And that was a battle that was worth fighting for.
And, absolutely. And it works.
And I'm glad that you say that you feel like it works.
It has that movie is such about authenticity, because it's even about the journey of authenticity through it. And being your own authentic self, I feel, is a part of it for both the characters, the father and the son. And it's, and like, even just like you get glee when there's a scene where they go to the Q bar. Right? Like, an actual gay bar in the Castro. It just grounds that movie so much, you know?
Well, although it wasn't actually the Q bar.
Was it not the Q bar?
No, it was shot at the what's it called? The cat club? On, like, Folsom?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I don't even know if that's still there.
It is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
But
the outside exterior, isn't the outside exterior?
Yeah, the exterior was well, I think it was just a wider shot of the Castro.
Okay. I just assumed he was at the Q bar.
And, I mean, I guess it's the same
sort
of narrow structure.
But, right.
But, yeah. And Peter, for that movie, you know, I mean, typically when you're shooting a movie, you go to the film commission, you get a permit, you go shoot where you get a permit. Peter Bratt, he, rather than do that and just, you know, go in there and it's like, I mean, I think there's an arrogance to that going in. It's like, well, we have a permit to be in your community, in your, you know, neighborhood or whatever. Yeah. I always find it very distasteful to feel like there are these sort of outsiders coming in and acting like they have ownership of your neighborhood when, you know, I mean, you know, when it's where you live. Yeah. So Peter went in and met with the community leaders, met with the elders, met with the gang, leaders, and asked permission and did ceremonies around it. And it was very, it was a very smart thing to do. I think the community welcomed us and, you know, and felt like asked as opposed to told.
Yeah.
So I think it was a very, very smart, you know, respectful way to shoot that.
Because there can kind of feel like this, I mean, with anything of not colonialism, but just that sort of sense of just like, I'm here taking over and I'm just going to shoot my art. And like, you know, like it feels like there's a partnership and like a respect thing too with like talking to the community members.
There's an entitlement, I think, with film and arrogance with film. And so I think it's nice to be. I always feel like, I mean, teach at San Francisco State, and I tell my students, it's, you know, treat everyone like you're a guest and treat everyone like they're an executive. You know, I mean, you're in, first of all, you know, for selfish reasons, you get a lot further by including people than excluding people.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and, you know, if you want cooperation, be courteous and inclusive and respectful.
It seems so simple, and yet like I mean, these are like basic things that you feel like you're taught when you're a kid.
But this is from my mom.
So it all started through Carlos Santana, and that was the journey.
So Carlos went to Peter. Peter came to me to produce this, which I was the first assistant director on the movie, and Peter and I really hit it off on a, you know, on multiple levels. We were both big crybabies on that movie. I mean, the movie's about, you know, a dad who rejects his gay son.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's these scenes where the gay son is just, you know, full of self-hate.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm your faggot son, dad, or whatever. And it's really like these moving, moving scenes. And then scenes where, like, you know, Benjamin's character, Che, beats him up.
Yeah.
And kicks him out of the house. Yeah. And it's super moving. And so Peter and I, big babies, are behind the monitor, just tears streaming down our face, like frequently.
Yeah.
So we really sort of bonded on an emotional level. And Benjamin as well. I mean, I love those guys. They're the real deal.
That's so beautiful. It's great to see that people, like, you know, moved on the set from the work that's happening.
Yeah.
You know.
So Peter called me to produce Dolores.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, very excited to do it. And I will admit, I had heard her name, you know, but I didn't know her story. And honestly, the more work we did, the more research we did on this movie, the more we discovered, not only do most people not know who she is, but her history has been actually actively suppressed.
Yeah.
So for various reasons.
Yeah. Can we talk about, because I, you know, I'm going to be honest too, I had to Wikipedia some information before I came to talk to you. It's like, I've heard of Dolores Huerta. Am I pronouncing that right? Huerta?
Huerta, yeah.
Huerta. See, my Spanish, I took 3 years of Spanish and I'm using Duolingo, so.
Yeah, no, it's good.
And it's like, it's a name that I've heard of before, but like the actual, and I know that she was, I knew she was a civil rights activist, but I didn't realize she was also involved in like the labor movements, right?
Well, she was a co-architect of the United Farm Workers Union.
That's
with
huge.
With Cesar Chavez.
Right.
Literally, like, partners. She wasn't this, you know, I mean, she's, Angela Davis in the movie says that Cesar is regarded as the leader of the movement and she's regarded as the housekeeper of the movement. And she was, like, she was the negotiator. She was the one negotiating the contracts with the growers.
Yeah.
And she was negotiating on half of these Latino immigrant, sometimes illiterate folks. She was negotiating these deals with the, you know, the white educated lawyers, attorneys, and winning. You know, she was, they were winning. And I mean, it was really kind of an unexpected, you know, they had unexpected successes. They fought hard. But the point is that she was a co-architect with Caesar, and yeah. Caesar got all the credit.
Right.
And he got all the credit because he's male.
Right.
And she was marginalized. You know, she, you know, like a lot of women in history, her contribution was, you know, is not in history books.
Yeah.
And it should be. I mean, I people watch this movie and they are shocked. They're embarrassed. They feel like, I don't know how I missed that in American history. And it's like, well, it's not there. It's not in our history.
Yeah.
But she feels like the, and I, for the longest time, I was calling her Forrest Gump, because she's like the Forrest Gump. She's interacted with every president. She got the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Obama.
Right.
She interacted. She got
She was there when Robert F. Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
And she was like in the same. She had just he had just won the California primary, right? And she was even on the stage with him.
Yeah. And it's in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And she she was in that. She was there. It's huge.
Well, her, you know, there were reports when he was shot. There were reports on the radio of a woman was shot as well.
Oh, wow.
And I don't actually know if that was true. I don't know if anyone else was shot, but
I think five people. I was reading like five people were shot.
Were injured.
Injured. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So her kids were listening. They're like, I don't know if that's my mom. You know, she was literally there. They watched her on TV. You know, right next to RFK.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, no, she was there for that. I mean, she's been a part of like all these significant events in history, and yet she's uncredited. So yeah. I think people are shocked to find out what her involvement is in our history, like in our laws.
Yeah.
She's, you know, in, you know, her work has been, is sort of in the fabric of you know, of our country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was, you know, and this film is, I think had the presidential election gone a different way, mm-hmm. it would feel more like we were going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like, I think like a lot of people were not going in that direction.
Yeah.
So this movie is about this is a historical film of things that happened 50, 40 years ago about immigration,
yeah.
about black and brown people being killed by police, about yeah. women's rights being taken away, about LGBT rights, about the environmental,
yeah.
about environmental rights. And you watch this movie and you're like, what the fuck have we been doing for 50 years?
Right. Why is this not further?
It becomes a cautionary tale. Yeah. It's like, why haven't we, why is this still, why are these still, all of them, our issues?
Yeah.
So, even more so. The movie has really resonated with people.
Well, especially today, like you just mentioned, with where the election went. And it's interesting to see work that was produced before the election that is now coming out. And whereas I feel like it would have been more of a... Had Hillary won, it would have been more of a victory lap. Let's keep it going. But now it's like... It's more of like a more momentum, like a push of like, we've got more work to do, get activated, like, you know, a rise up and fight.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are very inspired by this movie. I think it's a call to action, and that's what Dolores wanted.
Right.
And I didn't think she didn't feel like it was going to be,
yeah.
she didn't feel like it was going to be a call to action. She didn't want the movie to be about her. She wanted it to be about the work. It's
right.
like,
but you, she is the work, you know. Right. Like,
there's no access to the work without a person,
right? Yeah,
we're like Dolores. That's not, and I think she's like she's very, very sensitive about taking credit. You know,
right.
she's like there were a lot of people that were involved in this movement.
Absolutely.
There were a lot of women that were involved in this movement, and she doesn't want to be she doesn't want to be given the credit for this. Yet, I'm constantly telling her, you can get a lot more done the bigger your celebrity is.
It's true.
So, like, just own it. And she even talks in the movie about, she quotes Gloria Steinem about women taking credit for their work, about girls taking credit for their ideas,
mm-hmm.
and not letting men, you know, either discount their ideas or take credit for them. She talks about putting lights around it and bang the drum, you know,
yeah.
put your name on it. And
yeah.
she has trouble doing it.
Wow.
She has trouble doing it. I mean, she wants it to be this group effort.
Right.
But, anyway, so... but she, people leave this movie feeling, activated. They feel like they, I think you learn from the film that it's not, you know, you don't leave the activism to the activists. Mm. You know, you, everyone has power. Everyone right. has individual power.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so I think it's very timely. And we premiered on Inauguration Day.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Like, I mean, I get chills just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Of, like, again, resistance at every corner. And what I think is, like, I actually, and don't come throwing stones at me, folks, but, like, in some ways, I feel like the election needed to go into this way. Because even if Hillary won, it doesn't mean that everything that your documentary is about, the work still, doesn't matter what direction that the election would have went, the work still needs to be done, you know? Like, there was this fantasy, I think, of where we thought that we were. And the bedrock of everything that is occurring, it just brought everything to light. All this stuff that was happening in the darkness.
And that's what Dolores says. She's like, you know, I mean, I think that there's this, you know, I think half the country went into kind of a deep depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
yeah.
it, but I think out of that, you know, the, people became active.
Yeah.
And I think Dolores feels that way. She mm-hmm. feels like this is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is waking people up.
Yeah.
So
larger than I think that they were. I was talking to you about Dear White People, and they there's a Netflix show. We talked about it here on the podcast. They finished filming on Election Day, and it's interesting because it's like when that movie came out, it came out, I think, in 2014. And I back then used to get into a lot of debates with, like, you know, San Francisco liberal white people who, you know, wanted to be kind of roadblocks in the conversation around race. Of like, well, if you say that, it's too offensive. Like, I was fighting with these, you know, supposedly liberal white people. I don't hear shit from them now after that election. Like, people are just like, okay, yeah, I just want to, you know, like, it just sort of like,
yeah.
Those roadblocks, like, I'm not having those debates or things like that anymore. And so, but it's weird because it's like nothing's really changed, you know? I mean, these issues were still always there. People are just waking up to it more so.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's important for white people specifically to see things through other people's eyes.
How has working on this project, for how long did you work on this project?
It's 4 years.
4 years, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's like, I've known you probably 5 or 6 years. Maybe 6 years?
Yeah, I feel like
something like that.
But 20?
20 years, yeah. Yes, that's right. But it's interesting because I, like, through peripherally, like, hearing about you working on this project, well, I'll say for you, like, I'll ask you, how do you feel like this project has changed you? Have you, yeah.
Well, I feel like I've always had a sensitivity. I mean, I've had black sisters growing up. I had two adopted sisters and an adopted brother. But, I, you know, this was daily work. And this was hearing stories of people. You know, there's a guy in the movie, an LGBT activist, who's, you know, was a big part of getting gay marriage passed.
Oh,
And he, Rick Rivas, was a farm worker kid. And he said he grew up and white people, you know, the other white kids spit on him.
Wow.
And he thought he was a slave. He grew up thinking he was a slave. And it's so, like, moving to hear his story. But there were many stories like that. And I am constantly now looking at things. You know, I mean, I think that it's easy for me, I'll talk about me, to live behind the safety of my white skin. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And my maleness, honestly. You know what I mean? And I've become ridiculously aware of what that privilege means by looking at things from other people's perspective. I mean, I'm constantly, you know, especially with the movie, screening the movie. We screened the movie in San Francisco, for the San Francisco Film Society. We had an educational screening for high school kids.
Wow.
And a lot of them were kids of color, and a lot of them were immigrants, and a lot of them were undocumented. I wouldn't say a lot of them, but some of them were.
Yeah.
Some of them were non-English speaking.
Right.
So it was great to show it to kids. And, you know, I was told that they were very attentive. So it's, you know, nice stuff.
Well, and these are high school students?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great...
We have attention spans of walnuts,
I love documentaries now as an adult, but as a kid, I could not sit through them. So that's amazing that you've got...
You know, but the movie talks about, you know, Dolores' daughter said growing up, she said all these images in the media were, you know, it said that Brown was ugly mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. poor was bad, being poor was bad. And she like had this self-image. And I'm just thinking about kids growing up and like, you know, little black kids seeing like people that look like them being incarcerated in handcuffs. Little brown kids like seeing like families torn apart and you know, yeah. a wall separating, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've spent like the last 4 years crying.
Yeah.
Right. Being so close to this. And I think that, you know, I think that I was like, I'm so affected by this. And I realized, maybe it's an obvious thing, but it took me a while to realize that, you know, as a kid, as a boy, I grew up feeling kind of isolated, you know, kind of, you know, had this secret. You know, I was gay and I didn't see people like me in my town. I didn't see people like me on the media, and people like me on the media were, that had to be resolved. Like gay in the media had to be like, you either were a villain or you had to kill yourself mm-hmm. or whatever. There was mm-hmm. a resolution to it. Mm-hmm. It had to be solved right. one way or another. It had to be. And so I, you know, I realized that I, you know, I can equate those things. And, you know, when I was a kid, I could hide it. These days, yeah, there's no, I'd have to completely
like, I see
be.
You. I could, see
you. I'd have to be. I couldn't speak, and I'd have to sit completely still. And maybe.
But that's so great, though. Of like, I mean, to have seen like that journey of where, you know, to probably like I might imagine some fear as a kid, and now. You're working, you're helping to produce work and to tell stories. You're educating young minds and future artists who will continue to tell stories. Like, you know, Brian, we're in one of the oldest professions, this and prostitution, you know, storytelling. And I think it's so key and so important. Like, we can wake people up. We can even, we can make people laugh. Like, the work that we do is so important. And what's so great to see... you know, you don't have to tell these stories like these stories that you choose to that have diverse outlooks. You know, you don't have to, and you do. And I just, as a black queer artist, I just, you know, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I feel very honored to be part of this, you know, project, you know, specifically, and to be able to do this work.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it definitely feels like a, you know, an honor to be. To be able to do this work.
What were some of the challenges with working on this? Crying every day? I don't mean that. It's yeah. true, right? Like how, like every day probably having to come back to it of like, it's a lot of weight on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is, you know, and just let me say about the movie, it yeah. is, you know, it is, there's some, it's very emotional, but it's also, Peter didn't want to make this heavy kind of like dry historical documentary. The movie is very energetic. There's yeah. a lot of music yeah. and a lot of, you know, there's dancing in the movie. There's some humor. So, I mean, I think I think people come out of this movie feeling like they've had a full meal.
Yeah, totally.
But some of the challenges, I mean, you know, Dolores is like every fiber of her body is about social change.
Yeah.
And I, you know, she talks about it being a calling, and I've like this is the truest sense of calling I have ever seen. Like every bit of her life is about changing the world for people, making the world, you know, more equal. And and so as a result, she's an 87-year-old woman now, and as a result, she's working all the time.
Yeah.
So honestly, it was easier to get an interview with Hillary Clinton than it was with Dolores.
Easy.
And she, you know, I mean, it was like we'd schedule an interview and cross our fingers because we knew like a day before we were all driving down to Bakersfield, she would call and say, I have to go to Sacramento and, you know, fight or off to be in Washington, D.C. or whatever. She is very rarely home. She's constantly traveling. So, you know, and part of it was, I think they're protective of their story. I mean, she's already been marginalized and
yeah.
And excluded, and mm-hmm. so if her story is going to be told, they want to make sure that she's not exploited, and
absolutely,
you know, they're protective. There's also, you know, we wanted to make sure we're telling the truth. Like, we didn't want to do a puff piece
yeah.
about her,
right.
but you know, part of that, and it took a while. was access.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the family, and there are, she's 11 children. We interviewed 10 of them.
Wow.
And there's a, you know, I mean, it took a while, like a year, but we gained their trust.
Right.
And they opened their doors for us. They were, you know, in their hearts and, you know, they bared their souls. Like, we had some amazing interviews with the children and with Dolores. We've done 3 interviews with Dolores. We have probably, I don't know, 10 hours or 15 hours or something, I don't know, of interview footage with yeah. Dolores. So it's like that, to me, that archive is great.
Yeah.
But they opened their, you know, their archives for us, the Dolores Huerta Foundation archives, their personal archives. Her daughter, Maria Elena, is went to USC Film School and was pursuing a film career. She's since shifted, but she had all this footage. She was doing a film about her mother, and she took her a while to let us use that. But it was, you know, it's all this family stuff, and so you know, there's a lot of footage in this
movie. Sure, which is so great to have again, like, especially for a woman who her story was not told, has not been told, and to be able to have so much. I'm sure editing the movie down must have, like, I don't even know how do you pair, and not just her footage, like, who you also interviewed, Hillary Clinton, Angela Davis, like
Gloria Steinem.
Oh my gosh.
Luis Valdez. I mean, we did 50 interviews.
Huh.
50 interviews, and about 20 of them are in the movie. And the movie and the interviews that are the most important are the people, that worked. And, you know, we did interviews with, and that's not true. Hillary Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, a lot of the politicians were, you know, it was like, they were very gracious to give us their time, but it was a small amount of time. And they, you know, there's a caution, I think, to politicians. Yeah. So, you know, there was one, Raul Grijalva, who was Arizona senator, who gave us 2 hours and opened up and sort of wept on camera, and it was very moving.
Yeah.
He's a Latino senator,
mm-hmm.
and he was great. And so he's in the movie quite a bit. And Angela Davis and Gloria Steinem are, you know, amazing in the movie.
Angela Davis was my professor at UC Santa Cruz.
She said, yeah. And she's amazing.
She's wonderful.
She's amazing, yeah. Oof. And very, she has a, you know, both her and Gloria have a good sense of a good historical, you know, sense. You know, not just of their movements, but of all the movements and how they interacted.
Intersectional.
Intersectional is a word that's, you know, it's a new word that describes it. But Dolores has been talking about intersectionality since the 60s.
Yeah.
She was, like, working with the Black movement and ultimately the feminist movement. I mean, she came to New York to lead the Great Boycott in New York in the 70s. And, befriended Gloria Steinem.
Yeah.
And didn't really get women's issues, but left New York after spending time with Gloria, you know, a feminist.
Right.
She was actually anti-abortion when she came. Uh-huh. And she understood that it's not about killing a fetus.
Right.
It's about a woman's right to choose what happens to her own body.
Right.
So, and having that not be legislated by mostly men.
Right.
So she understood that. And she, you know, her choice was to have the kids.
Yeah.
But she had 11.
Which is also amazing. Like, everything that she did, and she had all of those, all those kids as well. I can barely take care of myself. And I can't imagine, like, having all these, you know, children to also take care of.
Well, I mean, it was an issue. I mean, her kids were, you know, there's a whole section in the film about abandonment and about the sacrifice that they had to make as kids so that her mom could help all these other farm worker kids. And her mother explained that, look, I'm helping all these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of other farm worker kids, but I'm not going to be able to come to your graduation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they had to miss, you know.
She was the movement. Like, she literally is, like, and you talk about, you know, it was her calling to do this, you know.
And she unapologetically admits that it was her primary thing, and kids were secondary.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, which explains why it was hard to get an interview with her, because it's like, look, if her kids are secondary, we're certainly going to be secondary. Too,
yeah. So,
but yeah, no, it was a to go back to the the editorial process, which you asked about,
yeah.
I never answered. But the with 50 interviews, we had a woman, Jennifer Petroselli, who left Lucasfilm to come work on our movie, and she worked on it. I say a year and a half, but I feel like it's been longer. I feel like she's been on it for a couple years.
Yeah.
Turning over every stone, finding all this footage, and there's footage that she found that Dolores herself hadn't seen. And so we have a ridiculous amount of footage in this movie. I mean, luckily we had the resources to spend the time. The editorial process was about a year and 2 months.
Sure.
It was a lot of stuff. And, she's 87.
Yeah.
When so she has, six decades of... Yeah. Of activism, more.
And also, imagine with piecing together a documentary, you don't quite know what the story is yet, right? Until you really kind of see the footage and find, the narrative. Right.
Well, there's the chronological history of it. So, that's the base.
Right.
But, like, what's the story?
Yeah.
What are the themes? And so, we went in, I guess, with an idea of what that was. But finding how to tell that story, it's like, we have a lot of voices. and we did not want to use all the interviews. We didn't want to have 50 people in there because I think we wanted characters. We wanted to cut back to someone telling. So, we have all these people telling the story and then, eventually you see their relevance to the story.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So what do you think some of the, well, what's one thing that you're walking away with this experience, this documentary? Like, what are some of the things that you walk away with?
Well, I ain't walking away for a while.
Okay.
This is
still living and breathing
for
you.
I mean, the movie will be in theaters in September.
Okay.
And then it will be on, PBS is our distributor.
That's amazing.
So they're doing this, they're releasing this theatrically, which is a new thing for them.
Okay.
They are releasing it. It'll be on TV next year. Yeah. So there's a long process of rolling this out. It's it's a little movie. It's a documentary.
Yeah.
It's a documentary about an 87-year-old woman. So like that's not really an easy thing to sell. You know what I mean? And
right.
So, but I think people watch the movie and they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
so it's going to have to be a lot of word of mouth. It's going to have to be a lot of work to get to that point.
That's what I literally was thinking. But you've got something so huge on your hands. And again, like, even just before prepping for to talk with you, just learning, just reading the things that I just quickly read, it's like, how did I not know this? And I grew up in California. She's even a huge part of California history.
Right.
And I think... And just like from what I understand about your documentary, like, the world is going to absolutely travel and spread. It's just like fire. And people like, and the timing of this seems like to be so, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Well, after working on it for 4 years and our premiere date landing on inauguration day doesn't feel like a coincidence.
Not at all. Yeah.
And a lot of people were saying that, it's like on that day people needed church.
Right.
So, and the following day was the Women's March. And,
right.
And Dolores was, we were in Park City, Utah at the Sundance Film Festival. And there was a march in Park City and she was asked by, Chelsea Handler was leading that,
that.
And so she was asked to speak in
amazing.
March. Yeah. No, it felt very organic.
Oh, wow.
And, she went and spoke and Peter Bratt and Benjamin Bratt introduced her and nobody mentioned the movie. It felt really organic and genuine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you hope people take away from this when they do see it? What are some of the hopes that you have?
Well, I mean, for sure the education of it is great. I mean, we've talked to a bunch of universities and one person said this is going to be the bedrock for Chicano studies. I mean, it's a very, I think, exhaustive film.
Yeah.
And dense. It's fast moving and it's dense. But for sure putting her in the history books where she belongs. I hope this feels like it's at least the beginning of that. But obviously if this can reach a mass audience, obviously social change would be amazing.
Absolutely.
So Somebody said every white person should see this movie.
Probably.
Which I agree. I mean, I think that there's a, I think that there's a tribe, as you know, as people are calling it. There's a base for this.
Yeah.
And it's mostly Latino, and you know, I think people really want to see the movie, but we want to get it beyond that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, storytelling, I think, how do you create empathy is for people to hear stories of people who are different than themselves. You know, it's one of the things why I love about podcasting is that we can share stories. And I think if more stories get told, you don't have people wanting to build stupid things like walls, because they then understand, oh, these people didn't cross the border. The border crossed them, you know? And
you know, that's what Dolores says.
Oh, does she,
that's
yeah.
her quote, yeah.
Oh, I got it from, and she probably got it from her, but I say.
Maybe.
Yeah, from Eva Longoria. She said that a few times.
The border didn't cross. Yeah, I don't know if Eva Longoria got it. Eva Longoria
was. She probably
was,
did get, or well, but Eva Longoria's family is like, that literally happened to them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm not sure.
Was she in the documentary?
Dolores. No, but she was interested in helping with it.
I love Eva Longoria.
Yeah, no, like, she's
phenomenal.
She's great.
Yeah.
But Dolores does say that all the time. She said it in the movie. But the phrase she did coin is, si se puede.
Oh, my God. I've said that a million times at a protest.
Which is, yes, we can, yeah. Which Obama took. And that's in the movie as well. Obama admits to her that he took her slogan. And
yeah. I mean, that is like any protest or chant, it's always there. That's a
classic. And it's credited to Caesar.
You're right.
And he didn't say it. It was Dolores. And it, you know, it, the story about why she says it is in the film.
Beautiful. So like one, that's like a little nugget, like one nugget of many other nuggets of that you're going to, when you go see this documentary, of all the information that you're going to see. And it's interesting because like, what I love is that I think this is the first of, there's so many stories like hers that I'm sure have been swept under the rug due to visibility, access, so many other women probably as well who've done such great work that we don't know their stories.
Right.
So I hope that this is the beginning of getting more of those stories out there.
And I'm
sure it's going to also inspire other women who are out there, you know, to continue doing the work that they're doing.
And take
credit.
Know, take credit for
take
it.
Take credit, woman.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, in the wake of Hillary's loss, I think it's nice to particularly for young girls to see an iconic, heroic figure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it gives girls, you know, an icon to who, you know, who has power.
It's interesting if you think about I can't think about like thinking about in elementary school, like who are like the like female figures that you study that you're like you need to look up to. You know, you learn about Martin.
Who are the people of color that you look up to?
We learn about Martin Luther King. That's it. You learn about a slew of like white men. You know, but like even just like women or a woman of color, like there's none of that. And like this, what an inspiring story. Why do you think that she never ran for office? Oh, well, you might know. Why did she never run for political office? I know she helped. She was inspiring other Latinas to run for office, but she herself didn't.
She did does. She? She does a lot of leadership training. She does train and get a lot of women in politics. she never did. I mean, she was the head of. She was the. You know, she was with the union until 2002, wow. I think. And then she started the Dolores Huerta Foundation.
Yeah.
So her son actually just ran for Congress.
Awesome.
He lost, but he's gonna try again.
Get back on that horse.
I mean, he's running in a very, very, you know, the most Republican district in California.
Wow.
Kern County. So, you know, he's got a fight on his hands.
Right.
But he would be great.
Yeah.
You know, he would be.
And those are probably places where we need to put people on the ground. Those places that are going to maybe be harder to get.
Right.
And just kind of keep throwing money at it, keep throwing effort and energy and grassroots at it. Because of all, like, we can do an entire episode about this, but all, like, the gerrymandering, all that bullshit and stuff like that. It just makes it really, really hard for us to get our power.
Right.
Know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's frustrating to see. Particularly gerrymandering, but just all of the things to keep white people in power. And just sort of the you know, the how white history is. You know, Michelle Obama was criticized for talking about, she lives in a place when she was, you know, first lady, that's built by slaves.
Yeah.
And that's not talked about.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we have our, in school, we learn about history of aggression, of war, of corporate, you know, successes, and, you know, very little about contributions of women particularly and people of color particularly.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully this is the beginning to,
yeah, you know. Because that's how you're able to move forward, is when you look at the history of things, even as ugly as it is. You know, why Germany won't have another, you know, concentration camp situation, because they learn about that in deep history of, you know, I recently went to a house, the George Mason house in Virginia, and really it should be just, it's the George Mason plantation. But they've, you know, taken out the slave quarters. Like, we wanted to see those. It's like, don't just glorify this house. And right. Like, oh, it's a beautiful big house. It was a plantation. And like, let's not shy away from that, because that's a part of the history of what this means.
Right.
It's just this erasure of this horrific thing that happened. Right. And there's still effects of it that we're experiencing today. And that's why we can't move forward, because we're not acknowledging the past.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, this country presents itself as this beacon of liberty and freedom and equality, and it's a bit of a farce.
Yeah.
You know, there's deep rooted slavery based institutionalized racism.
Yeah.
That, you know, that is kept in place.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even police are, you know, were around to prevent slaves from running away.
Right.
So there's, yeah, like, still, that is still ingrained in that culture.
Yeah.
You know, and we see that, you know, in all these, you know, and I don't think there's more black people being killed by police. I just think there's more people recording it.
Yeah. I think it's been there. Like, you know, if you watch, like, you know, even if, the Rodney King riots and things like that happened in the 90s, like, some of the same issues are still happening. It just, like you said, there's more
accountability.
Yeah.
Which could help.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to storytelling, to getting these stories out there of, you know, we are in a place that thankfully we have freedom of speech, so we can get these stories out there. And I think the problem is that, like, first of all, we can all read and we can see in the Constitution that it says that everybody is treated equally. So we all see that, and we all want that and know that we deserve to have that. And so if you didn't want people to have that, you shouldn't have fucking written it in there. And now we're all going for that. And we're going, it's going to happen. It's incremental. It's slow, and it's several steps backwards. But I think it's also great to see, again, looking back into people's stories like Dolores's, and seeing the work that has been done. And it's, I feel like it's like a continuing, a passing of the baton for future people to continue running with that. Keep on running.
Yeah.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for being on our show. It was so great to have you. Yeah. You're so talented, so wonderful, such a beautiful human being. Keep doing all the awesome things that you're doing. And make sure to see this documentary. It's coming out in the fall. They can
September,
see it in September.
Yeah.
See the Dolores Huerta documentary. Get the word out.
Thanks, Brian.
You know what? Can I just add?
Yeah.
We have social media.
Oh, yes. How can they find you on social media?
DoloresTheMovie.com.
Yes.
Dolores the Movie on Facebook.
Yes.
Dolores the Movie on Instagram. And Dolores_Movie on Twitter.
There it is. Follow this.
Yeah.
Tweet at it. Hashtag it. Get the word out.
Hashtag Dolores the Movie.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, James.
Hi, I'm comedian Emily Heller.
And I'm cartoonist Lisa Hannawalt.
And we're the hosts of Baby Geniuses.
Do you want to learn weird new facts?
Do you like hearing successful creative women talk about their poop?
Do you want the scoop on Martha Stewart's pony?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, our show is for you.
We interview people like Paul F. Tompkins,
Kristen Shaw,
Michael Che,
and more. So check us out on Maximum Fun.
And let us mess up your brain.
Yes, please.
Baby Geniuses, we know everything. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Ooh, Anneka, how was that?
James,
how was
that? Yes. Was amazing.
Yeah,
like, one, I feel so lucky that you were able to get this interview with Brian Benson. the work that he did, the people that are involved, just the whole story is like, I can't. I mean, I love Dolores Huerta. Like, I thought I knew about her, but I mean, this interview really is like, oh my
and like,
God.
I just appreciate like the work that, he's, and it was so inspiring, you know, to me. And it's like, for anybody out there, like, we all have gifts and talents and abilities, and we can. It's our, it is our destiny to shine bright, you know, and to do those, and to make those impacts wherever it is. And something recently, you know, Brian told me, cause I was maybe shopping around, I realized I really want to produce films. I really want to make films and create projects.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brian, you know, he teaches at, you know, film school, and I was talking about asking if I was going to go to film school, like, getting his opinion and idea if I should go. And he was like, you know, you don't need to go to film school to have the audacity to make films, right? You know, like,
I love that phrase. I love
it too. It's something we talked about on the podcast. Like, I feel like so often we ask for permission to do things, and
so we want to be accepted and allowed in when we need to just take charge and go
just do it
and do it ourselves.
Well, I think especially for any of us who are, like, especially for minority folks and double minorities, and if you are anything on that is not, you know, straight white man, we often feel like we need permission and to be able to do something or to be overqualified to do something.
Yeah.
And it's like, just go fucking do it. It's what Ava DuVernay did. Like, just go fucking do
it. It's what we did.
Oh yeah, we didn't ask her. You know what? You're so right. We wanted to create a voice in a space, and here we are. So I think I'm so inspired by the work that Brian does, and I hope everybody else, and not only Brian, but just like Dolores Huerta, who, like, she just fucking goes to work and just does it. 87 years old, and she's still doing the fucking work, y'all.
And not to mention that how she was involved in, like, literally every aspect of history, like, what was it called, like, Forrest Gump, like, basically how she was just, like, in every single picture and was like like right there at every moment, fucking giving these men who got all the credit like their information, and then just humbly standing by. Like, no, we need a plaque of her. We need to erect Dolores Huerta's up where Confederate people were.
Put those statues up. Yeah, you know what? Duh. Get the fucking racist ass statues out of my face and get a statue of Dolores Huerta on, like, especially California. I'm eyeballing you. She's done a lot of work there, but not only that, she only needs statues there, but we need to see some Dolores Huerta, like, statues. And also, those of you who hang out in Dolores Park, like, it should hold a little bit more weight now.
Right?
In Dolores Park in San Francisco.
Exactly. Rename it Dolores Huerta Park and, like, fucking enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure, I feel like Dolores Park is named after her.
I don't think so.
Oh, not? What other Dolores is it named after?
Mission Dolores. It's a mission.
Oh, okay. Well, we need to make it officially Dolores Huerta Park.
I know.
So if you, I know, like, you must be so excited. You're like, how do I fucking see this movie?
Right.
It is launching September 1st, and you can catch
it
all over the country. If you're in New York, it'll be playing September 1st through the 7th at the IFC Center.
Go check it out.
I won't list. Go to DoloresTheMovie.com and look and see, because it's everywhere. It's going to be in LA.
Yes.
It's going to be in San Francisco,
yes.
Berkeley,
yes.
San Rafael,
yes.
San Jose, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Fresno,
yes.
San Diego, Bakersfield,
everywhere
Pittsburgh,
in California.
Denver,
shit.
Tucson, Arizona, Atlanta,
yes.
Boston, Seattle, El Paso, Lubbock, Texas.
It's going to be in
You're going to get some love. Columbia.
And in Bakersfield, they are getting some boony ass towns up in this. This is good. Everybody has no excuse.
You have no excuse to not see this movie. I know it's like a double negative, but fuck you. I'm high off of adrenaline of making
Ride
changes and excitement.
Ride.
Don't come here. Don't come for me, kids. I want to be a substitute teacher.
Oh my God.
Come for me, kids. I don't know this math problem. Don't come for me
and take that down. Watch this.
So if you go to DoloresTheMovie.com and you don't see a screening, guess what? Get good news.
Okay.
There's a little box at the very button that says, if you want to host a screening, you can click on this little box and you can host a screening in your community. Especially if there's not one in your community, that means your community needs one. So take that initiative.
Yes.
What would Dolores Huerta do? She would organize for that screening to be there. And who knows? You can start perhaps like a new film collective or group or community and start getting activated. Like, this document documentary is going to be so dope, so awesome. So definitely check it out. There is no excuse. And no, it's also going to be airing on PBS in 2018. So you get to see it twice.
So if you want to wait a whole year, you can wait to see it on PBS. But I really like this idea, just going off of what you said earlier about we don't need to ask permission. So if you have like a space in an arena where you want to have a viewing of this beautiful movie, you don't have to ask permission. Just go ahead, click that, organize it, and you'll be surprised how easily things are to get, you know, something going like this. And you don't even know, you might even start and a film like collective.
And it's such a great way just to, I think it's an easy way to get your foot in the door or get your toe wet for the, in the pool of activism.
Yes. So
get wet, y'all. Exposure. Get wet in that pool of activism.
Most people don't, gross, but most people don't, they don't fucking, they know names, but they don't know what is attached to the name. Like, I'm sure a lot of people have heard the name before, but they didn't know what she did and the scope of her achievement, or even that she's still alive and fucking tearing shit up. So expose people to this. Go take your mom, take your auntie, take your uncle, take your neighbor, Chachi.
Take them all. Get your dog, and it better, I mean, it needs to be a service dog, otherwise they'll harass you. Yeah. But you know what? Just be like, you know what? Fido needs to see this. Get out of my face. Don't come for me. Just give them any one of those things, and they'll just back away because they'll think you're a crazy person. And you are. Crazy about activism.
Crazy about world change.
Ooh, see? Someone's like, you're crazy. Damn right I'm crazy. Crazy about changing the world.
See, that sounds like a Halle Berry moment. That sounds...
Halle Berry, we are writing your new script for you. That, like, can't you see it? Halle Berry is the activist.
Wait, I got a question for you, James. Just really quick.
Okay, yeah.
Is it Halle or Holly?
Oh, it's Halle. And I know we also, someone came for us. We won't say who, but thank you for keeping us correct.
It's true.
You know, so that we talk so fast. Like, we got so much information, but it's Halle Berry.
But it also could be our California accent.
Yeah. That's true. So don't come for me.
No.
Si se puede. Okay?
This is just my California accent. I can't help it. I don't complain when people say coffee instead of coffee.
Or tomato.
Who says tomato? What?
Great.
Is that or just you know what song? I don't?
The tomato. Or you know what? I don't like orange.
Who says orange?
Oh, they do. They be saying it over here. I think it's like a New England thing.
That or sounds arm.
Instead of arm, they'll say arm. You know? Arm. I hear you.
Oh, I say
you
know arm.
See, it's you.
That's my relatives.
It's you and Neke. It's you. Say orange.
There's also
say
base
it.
Versus vase.
Well, that's just being too fancy. But Neke, I want to get to. We have a contest. Or our 100th episode is coming in just 7 episodes, so it'll be here before you know it.
It is. Wait, James, I gotta say this. What? It is just around the river bend.
7 more episodes just around the river bend. We're coming now. We don't know what to do. Okay, see, Diana's coming for you. Okay. So in honor of our 100th episode, we are trying to get, this is where y'all come involved, we are trying to get to 100 reviews on iTunes. We're at 57. So over the course of the next 6 episodes, we'll be talking about this contest. And we're not, like, who, and if you are one of the reviewers, you're going to have a chance to win a Minority Corner prize package.
Ooh, and how fancy.
We'll be teasing what's in it over the weeks to come, but make sure that the only way that you can be entered into this contest, I feel like it's a radio disc jockey.
You are on that disc jockey scope right now, and you know what? I am into it. I feel like a listener, or I'm your Robin. I am.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm your Robin to your, what's his face?
Howard Stern. You just really call me Howard Stern, and I'll take it.
You know what? He's a radio legend. Doesn't mean you are him.
I am a shock jock. Sometimes you know I like to just say shit. Just
I know
to,
you just
know,
shock it up.
Stir the pot.
But like going back to this contest, I really want people to, one, can we keep the reviews positive? Well, that would be awesome.
But you know what? Even if you wrote a negative review, you're still going to be entered into winning this contest.
I'm not giving nobody a care package if they wrote us a negative review.
I am not. So you know what? That's why I make sure that you entered. So the guy who just said, no, thank you, and gave us 1 star. Don't let him win.
I'm not giving him a care package. Okay, you know what? Maybe that is some incentive. If somebody who doesn't like us, we are going to send you a care package anyways. So maybe refrain from writing a review, or you're going to get some of our shit.
I think it's a great get. Like, I would almost kind of like it that as someone who gave us a shitty review, they get this amazing care package from Minority Corner. It's kind of dope. I think it's kind of dope. And, like, I'm saying everybody's eligible. So, hopefully, it goes to a listener. A positive reviewer. Yeah. So, we'll take it all. Also, we are also on Stitcher. We just recently got onto the Stitch.
Yay!
And I also want to read the iTunes.
Okay.
iTunes, what do we call it? Comment of the week.
Yes. What it do. Comment of the week.
This one goes from Grenwick Press, who gave us 5 stars, says that we are a source of info and inspiration. They said, Aneke and James don't know everything, but they're always learning. We don't. This is like the most truthful review ever. Keep it honest. We don't know everything, but they're always learning and sharing with the rest of us.
Minority
Corner is a fun podcast with good info, humor, and, well, it's hard to describe exactly. Give an episode a try and you'll see exactly what I mean. Minority Corner also has a fun, awesome Facebook community. That's you all.
Yes,
not a huge
kids.
Fan of Facebook, but I stick around for the group like this. So you all got a shout out.
My God.
Our Corner Kids.
Thank you, reviewer. What's the name of this reviewer? Should we put their name out? I don't know.
Grenwick Press.
Thank you so much. That is such a nice thing to say. Like, all of those things are so truthful and nice. That just makes my heart warm.
And then kicking it over to the tweet of the week. This one's actually a while back, but we haven't done this in a while.
So tweet of the week.
Tweet. Ooh, that's good. See, we've got new theme songs. This is from at Jammin' Travis, wrote love with several loves. Love at Minority Corner. I've definitely learned how to be a better ally from them. Hilarious, thought-provoking, and inspiring.
So sweet. Thank you. We love you guys, too.
And we got a Facebook message. This is usually in private, but I'm putting it on blast. From Chad S., who wrote, Hey, James and Aneke, I love your show. I already listened to today's episode because F working, right? Yay, Friday. So just thought I would.
You know what? I love that. And I'm kind of glad you didn't say his last name because who knows if his boss listens.
He's at work. And watch, his boss is also listening and they're like, wait a minute.
I know. What?
And I want to tweet. I want to tease something for next week.
Okay, I like a little teaser. Give me some tease.
Well, I went on the Facebooks and I wrote a very pressing question that everybody was probably wondering the same thing. And I got some great answers from Facebook in general on my own private Facebook feed.
Okay.
I asked, what happened to Tiffany's career, or why? You know, Tiffany.
Oh, I saw that people thought you were talking about Tiffany Haddish, who's real hot right now from Girls
Trip. Get out of here!
But hey, I know we'll who talk you're
about
talking about.
But, like, clearly, the youngins didn't know I was talking about Tiffany, who I think she's alone now.
I was just going to say, as soon as I saw you post that thing, I was like, I know who James is talking about. And then I think I'm alone. We're alone now, stuck in my head for the rest of the day.
You're welcome. And, you know, I had some slooper sleuths who dug deep, and I will tell you the gossip of what happened to Tiffany's career.
What's going on with Tiffany? I think we're alone now.
This is the teaser, and I can't tell you now. You got to tune in for next week. That's next week. And also, I think next week we should talk about the opiads versus crack thing. Like how everyone, we'll just say this right now. I am so bothered by every time it's this huge epidemic and they're like, oh, we're going to fix the opioid crisis. And it's a bunch of white people. Meanwhile, crack has been affecting this country for decades, and it affects black and brown folks, and nobody gives two flying fucks.
They're just like, gross, and then they move on. So I am ready to hear about these different things next week that's coming up. You guys keep listening. We love you all. I don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but it's going to be awesome.
Join in on the, it's just, I don't know if that's going to be my main headlining topic, but I thought we should dive into it because I'm just annoyed by it.
I love it.
Or maybe we've said enough. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So big thanks. I don't know. Please remember iTunes. Follow us at Twitter. What are we at Twitter?
We are at Minority Corner. Corner is spelled with a K on Twitter.
You can find the Minority Corner Kids Club Playground.
It's just the Minority Corner. The Corner Kids Playground. Corner Kids Playground is on Facebook. Join it. It is an active community. People do recommendations of other podcasts. They do, their art is on there. Poetry, articles, conversation, and just love.
Yeah, so much love. And on that, si se puede, y'all.
Yes, si se puede.
Puede. Si se puede. And have a fantastic week. We love you. Thank you so much for listening. And, share this episode, too. Let someone else feel the love. Don't hog it.
Yeah, share the wealth. Share it.
Yeah. Si tu puede. Is that how I say that?
Español.
Yeah, trying. All right, see you next week.
Bye.
Love you.
Creativity, comedy, and friendship. All these things and more are waiting for you at Max FunCon East at the maybe haunted Pocono Manor, September 1st through 3rd. We only have a few tickets left, and they're on sale right now, so head on over to MaxFunCon.com to buy your tickets. Don't miss out.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.